This is 1A. I'm Jen White in Washington. It's either the last election of 2020 or the first election of 2021. Tomorrow, Georgia decides the fate of its two Senate seats. But while it may be a new year, a 2020-style Sunday news drop could throw a last-minute twist into the race.
The people of Georgia are angry. The people of the country are angry. And there's nothing wrong with saying that, you know, that you've recalculated.
Well, Mr. President, the challenge that you have is the data you have is wrong.
That was part of an hour-long phone call between President Donald Trump and Georgia Secretary of State Brad Raffensperger. What impact could the tape have on the runoffs, and what about its implications for the Republican Party? Later this hour, we'll hear from one of the candidates and from the CEO of Dominion Voting Systems. The company has been the subject of baseless accusations from President Trump and his supporters. Their voting machines will tabulate all the ballots in Georgia's runoffs tomorrow. But first, let's kick things off with a view from the ground. Emma Hurt is a politics reporter with WABE, Atlanta's NPR station. Emma, welcome back.
Hi, Jen. Thanks for having me.
And Deborah Scott is the executive director of Georgia Stand Up. It's a nonprofit focused on community organizing and helping people vote. Deborah, welcome.
Thank you. How are you?
Doing all right. Well, Emma, let's start by hearing a bit more of the audio from this call between Trump and Raffensperger. The Washington Post published the audio yesterday, but the call took place on Saturday.
You know what they did, and you're not reporting it. That's a criminal offense. And you know, you can't let that happen. That's a big risk to you and to Ryan, your lawyer. That's a big risk. But they are shredding ballots, in my opinion, based on what I've heard, and they are removing machinery, and they're moving it as fast as they can, both of which are criminal fines, and you can't let it happen, and you are letting it happen. You know, I mean, I'm notifying you that you're letting it happen. So, look, all I want to do is this. I just want to find 11,780 votes, which is one more than we have.
Emma, for people who have somehow missed this news, briefly give us an overview of this call.
Yeah, so the president and some of his advisors spoke with the Secretary of State in Georgia and some of his attorneys and members of his office as well to talk through, it seems, some of the grievances that the president has had with Georgia's election system. Meanwhile, the Secretary of State's office has really set itself apart in Georgia by refusing to acknowledge voter fraud, widespread voter fraud, by saying, look, we know that our election system was secure, that no widespread voter fraud happened. And this is a president trying to basically convince the Secretary of State, it seems, to help him find votes to flip the state, which, you know, as the governor said last week, that horse has left the barn in Georgia. It's in D.C. now with the Electoral College vote. And so this was just really, you know, the president has been talking about voter fraud on Twitter for weeks now. But to hear it in this call, to hear him lobbying a state official like this, and to hear the officials calmly refuting these claims and calmly, you know, saying, Mr. President, that's not true. We can't do that. Was really remarkable.
Well, we got this message from David on Facebook who says, 3.5 years ago, I heard a pundit predict that following Trump's base, rather than having a core platform, would destroy the Republican Party. It will be interesting to see how the party reacts if they lose this election. Brian Kemp is wise to distance himself from it. Last week, the president once again said Georgia's Republican Governor Brian Kemp should resign. We should mention Raffensperger is also a Republican. How is this shaking up Georgia's establishment on the Republican side?
You know, there's the morale among Republicans that I've spoken to today and yesterday is not great right now. This is, you know, this is new, but it's following a path that we've been going down here for Republicans in Georgia, where the president has been openly criticizing people that he used to endorse, including Raffensperger and Governor Kemp, and really sowing confusion among Republican voters. He's telling people to vote tomorrow in the runoffs, but at the same time, you know, questioning the system in November, calling it, you know, saying it was fraudulent. And so there's just been this whole mess of messages coming out of the White House. And the big worry right now for Republicans, of course, is if this, you know, if this dissuades just a couple thousand Republican voters from turning out tomorrow, that could be the difference in what are really competitive Senate races.
Well, Deborah, your organization has been pushing to get out the vote since before November. How have those efforts been going? Deborah, are you with us?
Absolutely. We have been registering voters and yes. Hello, can you hear me?
We can hear you.
Hello?
Okay.
Okay, great. We have been engaging voters. I'm registering voters and can you hear me now?
Yes, we can.
Hello? Hello? Okay. We have been engaging voters and registering voters and getting people out to vote ever since the November election and even before that. We are an organization that not only works on voter registration and civic engagement, but we also work on issues that affect everyday lives here in Georgia. So when we're talking about engaging our voters, it's not because we're a new organization. We've been around for 16 years and we've been working on issues around race, class, and politics, and civic engagement in building their power from the community level on. So we're excited because we know that 3 million voters thus far have already turned out to vote, and we're excited about what's going to happen Tuesday. We know that people are trying to suppress the vote and depress the vote, but we are celebrating the voters and really excited in a nonpartisan way to make sure that the voters speak their values at the voting booth.
Emma, give us a snapshot of the race as it stands right now. How close are these races?
Really close. I mean, the polling has been too close to call for some time. But I think what we've seen kind of as a higher level narrative is at the beginning of this, you know, these were the Republicans' races to lose. The Republicans outperformed Democrats in these two Senate races in November, even though Biden did narrowly carry the state. And here we are, you know, the day before the election, and given the president's rhetoric and the kind of the civil war that has erupted in the Republican Party, where there really wasn't one before, it's looking even closer than people might assume, because Republicans are the incumbent party in Georgia, and so Republican voters tend to turn out better. They are better at voting, right? And are more reliable, particularly for races like the runoffs. But, you know, these clearly aren't normal runoffs, as Deborah can attest. You know, more than 3 million voters, this is not normal runoff turnout. And so efforts that groups like Deborah's have been doing seem to really be working, as well as the, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars that have been spent on ads that are basically inescapable. So there are a lot of people who are going to be voting now. And so those normal rules about Republicans winning runoffs might not apply here.
Deborah, how much concern have you heard from Georgia voters about these claims of election fraud?
Well, we have heard more about election disenfranchisement. We know that a number of polls have been closed. We know that they're making it harder for voters to cast their ballot. The lines are long in some cases for early vote. And so we expect there to be other tactics that happen. People are not necessarily afraid to come out and vote, but they are voting their values and coming out to the polls early. That our message to them is to come out in case you have to cast a provisional ballot so that we can have time to get that ballot cured. We are excited because we know that people are excited. We have people all across the state. We have canvassers out knocking on doors. We have phone bank texting, events going on, people doing parties at the polls. We're excited and we're not going to be deterred. So I think this was just a message that we knew things like this were happening and conversations were happening. It's just been brought to the light of day.
And what do you say to would-be voters who are concerned their vote doesn't matter or that it won't be counted?
Well, actually, that's what we tell them, that your vote does matter. And look at what they did in November and how they were able to vote their values and the turnout to be what they expected it to be. We are a nonpartisan organization, so we are talking about kitchen table issues, what's happening with COVID-19 tests, what's happening with the vaccine, unemployment, housing insecurity, food insecurity, even economic insecurity and health care and educational insecurity. So people are hurting in Georgia, and they're coming out to vote so that they can make sure that they use their currency, and their currency is their ballot. And then after they vote, we want them to come back out and stay engaged in this electoral process.
Emma, very briefly, put the early voting numbers into perspective for us. More than 2.3 million people have already cast their vote. What does that mean for this election?
Yeah, it's actually grown. It's now more than 3 million. And that is turnout that's a bit below the 2020 turnout, you know, at this time in early voting. But we've got nearly 120,000 new voters in this runoff number that didn't vote in the general. So that's another important number that everybody's looking at.
We're talking to Emma Hurt. She's a politics reporter with WABE in Atlanta. She's staying with us. We also spoke to Deborah Scott. She's the executive director of Georgia Stand Up, a nonprofit helping to get out the vote during the Senate runoffs. Deborah, thanks for speaking with us.
Thank you so much.
Coming up, we hear from one of the candidates directly. John Ossoff joins us to talk about his Senate bid. I'm Jen White. This is 1A from WAMU and NPR. I'm Jen White. This is 1A. We're talking about tomorrow's Senate runoffs in Georgia with Emma Hurt, politics reporter at WABE, that's Atlanta's NPR station. Now, today, both the president and the president-elect are heading down south. Donald Trump will rally in Dalton County for the Republicans. Joe Biden will rally in Fulton County for the Democrats. One of the would-be senators Biden is rallying on behalf of is Democratic candidate John Ossoff. His campaign slogan is "Vote Your Ossoff." He's up against Republican Senator David Perdue, and he joins us now to talk about his bid. John, I know you're having a busy week, so thanks for making time to check in.
Thank you so much for having me. Hello from Augusta, Georgia. We just finished a rally with Reverend Warnock.
Well, we should also note that we asked all four candidates to join us, and the invitation still stands. So as of December 30th, you're 1 point ahead in the polls. That's according to 538's average of all runoff polling. The election was head-to-head. Now the runoff is head-to-head. Where do you see your best path to victory?
This is all about energizing record-shattering turnout, and we're encouraged by the turnout we've seen in early vote, particularly among young voters and black voters. We've building a historic coalition in Georgia that really represents the rise of a new South. You know, since the early 1970s, the Republican strategy in the South has been to divide people along racial and cultural lines so that people from different backgrounds fail to grasp their shared economic and health interests. And here in these two all-important Senate runoffs in Georgia now, you've got the young Jewish son of an immigrant mentored by John Lewis. That's me running alongside the senior pastor at Ebenezer Baptist Church, a black preacher who pastored John Lewis. That's Reverend Raphael Warnock. And that represents how far Georgia has come in the last 10 years and indeed over the last half century.
Well, we got this message from Lisa on Facebook who says, "Georgia voter here. I wasn't thrilled with either of my choices. I only voted for one of the runoffs because I could not in good conscience vote for either candidate in the other." For people who are concerned about the division of power in Congress, you say one party controlling the House, Senate, and presidency is too much power. How do you respond to that concern?
Well, look, if Mitch McConnell and Republicans maintain control of the Senate, the result will be paralysis and gridlock. I think folks well remember how Barack Obama was treated by the Republican Senate in his second term. McConnell and his caucus will exercise power ruthlessly for power's own sake. They will block the progress that we need. They will block the COVID relief that people need. I mean, even right now, with a Republican president who supports $2,000 stimulus checks, and a Democratic president-elect who supports $2,000 stimulus checks, and overwhelming public opinion supporting generous, direct COVID relief for the American people. McConnell is blocking the $2,000 checks. So imagine what he will do when it is a Democrat in the White House. Increasing the minimum wage, he'll block it. Civil rights and voting rights legislation, he'll block it. The kind of investment in infrastructure and clean energy that we need, he'll block it. So the choice here is between progress and paralysis. And so, the people of Georgia are voting in record numbers for progress.
Do you see this as a Mitch McConnell issue or a Republican Party issue?
Well, look, Mitch McConnell is who he is. And the nature of Washington right now, sadly, is such that divided government will yield gridlock. And we don't have time for gridlock. People are suffering right now. People need help right now. Hospital systems, nursing homes are buckling under the weight of this pandemic. Millions of people are facing eviction and foreclosure. Gas bill piling up, credit cards maxed out, unable to make ends meet. This is a matter of urgency for the people that Congress act where Congress has failed to act for the last 8 months and get direct relief to the American people and then enact a broader agenda that will serve working families across this country.
Do you think Democrats have pushed hard enough in Congress for what you're arguing for right now?
The Democratic House passed a very generous and substantial COVID relief package last summer. I mean, there's really no room for false equivalency here. The United States House of Representatives passed major additional COVID relief 8 months ago. It is the United States Senate that has been blocking that relief for months and months and months. And now, even again, when you've got bipartisan consensus, Donald Trump and Joe Biden and the American people agree that $2,000 stimulus checks are required to keep families on their feet and in their homes, still the Senate is blocking the relief that people need. And that is just a shadow of what will come if Mitch McConnell and his caucus are in a position to block the entire agenda that Joe Biden and Kamala Harris need to pass to help people, expanding the Pell Grant program so folks don't have to take on debt to get a degree from a public college or an HBCU, making America the world leader in clean energy production. I mean, look, everybody out there listening at home and in the car, I want you to feel positive and optimistic about what we can achieve together. But we have to be able to enact legislation and govern to get these things done. And that means we need the Senate majority.
Well, it's interesting that these two runoff races in Georgia are taking place in that state. You ran for a House seat in 2017 and narrowly lost. But then the person who beat you, Republican Karen Handel, just lost her reelection bid in November to Democrat Lucy McBath. So there's this teeter-totter in Georgia. What does that say to you about Georgia politics more broadly?
Well, it's less a teeter-totter in Georgia and more consistent progress. Look, the last 10 years in Georgia, much of this work led by Stacey Abrams, my 2017 U.S. House race, which was historic, which brought tens of thousands of volunteers into the fold, which proved that we could build political power and make progress even in areas that were considered non-competitive politically. All of this has been a long-term effort to shift politics in Georgia. And now Georgia is the most competitive battleground state in the country, hosting two U.S. Senate runoffs for Senate control. And we are continuing to invest in unprecedented grassroots organization. My campaign has hired nearly 3,000 young people, predominantly from communities of color, to organize their own peer groups, their own networks, their own communities, involving people in politics who never even imagined that they would be asked to get involved in politics, empowering communities and demographics who have been marginalized and ignored. And that has been the spirit of Democratic political activism in Georgia for the last decade. And it's why we're going to win tomorrow, is because we've been doing that hard work over time with a strategic mindset to build power.
We're talking to John Ossoff. He's one of two Democratic candidates running for a seat in Georgia's Senate runoffs tomorrow. We did extend an invitation to all four candidates in those races. We're also talking to Emma Hurt, politics reporter with WABE in Atlanta. Emma, for those who don't live in Georgia, tell us a bit about John's opponent, Senator David Perdue.
Hi, John. Senator Perdue is the incumbent that we have in this race, and he won in 2014 as a conservative businessman. You know, his profile sort of mirrored President Trump's 2 years before Trump's run. He is the cousin of a former governor of Georgia, and so there was a lot of name ID in his campaign. But in his time in the Senate, you know, he has really closely aligned himself with the president, and he and his counterpart, Senator Kelly Loeffler, who was appointed last year, have both ran their campaigns very, very close to the president as well.
Georgia voters are in a bit of a bizarre situation right now. If the Senate goes Republican, they will likely not see these $2,000 payments, which are being pushed by President Trump. Explain a little bit more about the dynamics that are at play right now between Republicans, Emma.
Yeah, it's a bit of a twilight zone for Republicans in Georgia right now because Senator Perdue ran his 2014 campaign as a budget hawk, as a deficit hawk, talking about the national debt. And he previously was lukewarm on the idea of additional stimulus checks, you know, favoring income tax credit instead. But because the president came out and supported this $2,000 stimulus increase, he and Senator Loeffler both joined in those calls, despite the fact that other members of their caucus have not supported that. And so, you know, as John can speak to as well, it's a bit of a twilight zone watching the Republicans have to continue to keep their message close to the president and try to stay on track there.
Well, we got this tweet from Vintage, who says, "I'm reading many attacks on Reverend Warnock that are being proven false. I'm tired of having to play the card. However, I'm led to believe it's a campaign to attack a black man." John, NBC News recently obtained a memo allegedly from your campaign managers sounding the alarm about outside spending by the GOP. How concerned are you about the financial state of the campaign?
Well, look, we're down to the final 24 hours, and we've been working hard to ensure that we have the resources necessary to sustain this massive turnout operation. I mean, at this point, it's really not about the TV ads. To be clear, more money has been spent attacking me than any candidate for the United States Senate in American history over the last year. But that's ultimately not what this is about. This is about who gets out and votes for change. And that's why my campaign has prioritized investment in community organizing, in grassroots field efforts, in canvassing. We made over 1.4 million phone calls to voters yesterday. This is the largest turnout effort in American history that we're running in Georgia. And so, yes, the GOP is doing what they do. It's paint by numbers, partisan attacks, very personal. But you know what? We tune it out and focus on getting out the vote and presenting the people with a positive vision of what we can do to improve life for working people, to improve equity, to expand justice, passing landmark civil rights and voting rights bills, investing in economic recovery, getting economic relief to people who are suffering, reopening the 9 hospitals that have closed in Georgia in the last 10 years, building new clinics to serve every community in this state. My wife works as an OBGYN doc at Grady Hospital in labor and delivery in Atlanta. Georgia has one of the highest maternal mortality rates in the United States. Mothers and newborn babies who are in poor health because our states refuse to expand Medicaid and neglected maternal health. My point is that the GOP can run all the negative attacks they want and spend the hundreds of millions of dollars. We're speaking for the people. Reverend Warnock and I are building a coalition of the people, for the people, and by the people to elect representatives who will put the welfare of the people ahead of their own bank accounts, ahead of partisan interests.
John, I want to get your reaction to the news that broke yesterday, this call between President Trump and Raffensperger about election results. What was your reaction when you heard that audio?
Well, that's a brazen assault on our democracy. For the president of the United States to try to intimidate state election officials to get them to reverse the outcome of a lawfully conducted election, that's a direct attack on black voters in Georgia, because it was the power of black turnout that delivered this state for Joe Biden and Kamala Harris. And by the way, this comes against the backdrop of 6 lawsuits that David Perdue and Kelly Loeffler and Georgia Republicans have filed to try to suppress voters during this runoff, trying to purge the rolls, trying to remove ballot drop boxes, trying to restrict voting hours and locations. This is why we need a new Voting Rights Act in this country, to make voter suppression a federal crime and secure the sacred franchise for all people. I cut my teeth in politics working for John Lewis. He bled on the Edmund Pettus Bridge for voting rights. And the fact that the President of the United States and Georgia's two U.S. senators are still working to disenfranchise their own citizens is a disgrace. It cannot stand. And it's why we need new voting rights legislation to pass Congress.
Do you think there is some sort of accountability that should come into play here? And what would it look like to your mind?
For the president?
For the president, also for the GOP senators who plan to challenge Biden's win.
Well, look, the first and most immediate accountability that can be rendered is for the people of Georgia to stand up and vote in record numbers tomorrow in defiance of these efforts to disenfranchise them. And if the words that the president uttered or the effort that he undertook was not lawful, and I suspect that it may not have been, then Georgia's authorities need to look into that.
If you're elected, what's the number one thing you think needs to be on the Senate's to-do list?
Well, step one is responding properly to this COVID-19 pandemic. One of the reasons that the death toll has been so catastrophic and the economic cost so high is that foolish politicians, and it starts at the very top in the Oval Office, have disregarded and ignored and disempowered public health expertise in a public health crisis. Georgia hosts the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, the premier epidemiological agency in the world. And I'm ready to work with this incoming administration to ensure that the CDC is resourced and empowered to lead a national health response strategy, to ensure that testing and vaccines are free for every American, so that immunization is not exclusively available to the wealthy and well-connected, to resource our hospital systems. We got hospitals across this country right now that are overflowing critical care into chapels and hallways. This is the United States of America. We should be leading the world in the quality of our response to this pandemic. So we need to resource the public health response. We need to get direct financial relief to the American people. That means $2,000 stimulus checks. That means hazard pay for essential workers, moratoria on evictions to keep people in their homes, more direct support for small businesses. And then my second priority, and this will begin as soon as I take office, will be to work on landmark civil rights legislation to reform our criminal justice system and secure equal justice for all people, regardless of race and regardless of class. Remember, it was Glenn County, Georgia, where Ahmaud Arbery was gunned down in the street on camera in broad daylight, and the local authorities looked the other way because he was a young black man. We can't say we have equal justice in this country as long as events like that unfold week after week, month after month, and we need landmark civil rights legislation. These next 2 years can be the most productive for civil rights and voting rights since 1964 and 1965.
Where do you see room for bipartisanship, if at all?
I'm ready to work with any Republican colleagues who share these priorities and have the people in their hearts. And I'm ready to stand up to any colleagues in either party who do not. And I really do think that there is a lot of potential to work together on major investment in infrastructure and economic recovery. I mean, the people support a historic infrastructure plan. The people support investment in transit and transportation, upgrading public school facilities, making, as I mentioned earlier, America the number one producer of clean and renewable energy in the world to respond to this climate crisis. And so I think there's an opportunity for bipartisan cooperation on infrastructure and economic recovery. And I appreciate you playing me out with some outcast, Miss Jackson, as we close this segment on these elections in Georgia. Much love to everybody.
That's John Ossoff. He's a Democratic candidate for one of Georgia's two Senate seats. He's up against Republican Senator David Perdue in the runoffs tomorrow. John, thanks for joining us. And we should note that we asked all four four candidates to join us, and the invitation still stands. WABE's Emma Hurt is sticking around, and in just a moment, across the state of Georgia, millions of ballots are being cast on Dominion voting machines. The company has found itself the target of a massive misinformation campaign spearheaded by the President of the United States. We talked to Dominion's CEO about what he's doing to ensure the Georgia runoffs are secure. I'm Jen White. We'll hear more from you and our guests in a moment. Let's get back to our curtain raiser on the Georgia Senate runoffs with Emma Hurt. She's a politics reporter at WABE in Atlanta. And let's bring in one more voice. John Poulos is the CEO of Dominion Voting Systems Incorporated. Their machines will process millions of votes for the Georgia runoffs. John, welcome to 1A.
Hi there. Nice to be here.
So over the last 2 months, there have been dozens of elections fraud lawsuits filed against your company. To date, nearly all of them have been dismissed. Are you planning to file your own lawsuit either against the president or against the right-wing media outlets that have been fanning the flames of these conspiracy theories?
Well, certainly there's been a lot of falsities repeated about Dominion voting systems, and they have been damaging not only to ourselves, our employees, but also our customers that use our technology. We are currently focused on a lawsuit against Sidney Powell, which is imminent, as it really is Sidney Powell who has been the most egregious and prolific purveyor of the falsities against Dominion.
And can you tell us any more details about that lawsuit and what you're alleging?
Well, certainly there's a lot of bizarre allegations that have been made by Sidney Powell, repeated by others, and amplified by certain media outlets. And the allegations that ranging from our creation being allegedly in Venezuela or funded by communist members of the Cuban or Chinese government are patently false. They're completely false. And there's absolutely no basis to truth in them. And that's really what our legal team is focused on. All of the various claims that have been repeated in the press and through various outlets of the media and social media.
What specific remedies are you looking for?
Well, we don't really have a number today, not yet. Our reputation has been damaged. There's no question about that. When the president is using information that he got from Sidney Powell, singling us out, even in jurisdictions where we don't work, there's no question that it is damaging.
In a recent letter to Trump attorney Sidney Powell, you wrote that your employees have been stalked, harassed, received death threats. Explain a little bit more about the impact of this misinformation campaign and the impact it's having on your personal safety and that of your employees.
It has had a tremendous effect on our employees, and it's been extremely trying and difficult for many of them. It's unfortunately very easy to make false allegations on Twitter or in press conferences where there are no rules or evidence. And in the most extreme cases, we've had employees that are unable to return to their homes for fear of their personal safety.
Well, last week, another judge threw out yet another lawsuit against your company. It was brought by a supporter of the president. The suit claimed that corrupt voting machines would change the results of tomorrow's runoffs, and Judge Timothy Batten called it, quote, astonishingly speculative. Can you just outline the steps you're taking to ensure the integrity of tomorrow's elections in Georgia?
Well, first off, paper ballots. Dominion systems do one thing. They accurately tabulate paper ballots. Our systems produce 100% voter-verified, auditable paper ballots, which is widely considered the gold standard when it comes to election security. Any allegations of manipulation, if it were to be true, which it is not, the paper ballots would simply not match the corresponding vote tallies from the voter registration lists. And the paper ballots themselves are kept physically secure by the local bipartisan election officials. That is exactly what is hand counted in recounts, in hand reviewed audits. In the case of the Georgia presidential election, state officials counted roughly 5 million ballots three times, one of which was a hand count recount, and each time reaffirming the results. So ultimately, the physical security that is maintained by local bipartisan election officials is at the end of the day what voters should keep in mind in Georgia.
Now, Emma, the entire state is using Dominion voting machines in tomorrow's election. Just explain why that is and if the state has run into any issues with them in the past.
The state decided to replace its 20-year-old voting machines last year, and those voting machines didn't have a paper trail, as Mr. Poulos was outlining about the new machines. And so this is new to have the ability in Georgia to go through and hand count the paper ballots. And the whole point of the system was to make it more secure, right? And to give voters more confidence in the system. And so there's this kind of grand irony that this election cycle in particular, that has come into question even more so than it's ever been.
Well, I want to play a bit more audio from this conversation between President Trump, Georgia's Secretary of State Brad Raffensperger, and the Secretary's lawyer, Ryan Germany. It was recorded on Saturday and released by The Washington Post yesterday.
Do you think it's possible that they shredded ballots in Fulton County? Because that's what the rumor is. And also that Dominion took out machines. That Dominion is really moving fast to get rid of their machinery. Do you know anything about that? Because that's illegal.
This is Ryan Germany. No, Dominion has not moved any machinery out of Fulton County. We're having
Have they moved the inner parts of the machines and replaced them with other parts?
No.
You sure, Ryan?
I'm sure.
John, I'm not going to ask you to refute all the conspiracy theories because, again, there's no evidence to back any of it up. But for people who are unfamiliar with your voting machines, just explain how they work. And if I'm a voter going to cast my vote in Georgia, how does it all happen?
Sure. Well, first off, we have two types of technology. The first piece is a technology that allows voters to create a paper ballot, and that paper ballot has a clear indication of the candidates that any voter wishes to vote for. And it's in that durable paper ballot that the voter can verify before casting their ballot. The reason for that type of technology is to allow voters of all abilities, be it language or physical ability, to privately and independently create that paper ballot. The second piece of technology that we provide is a means to scan those paper ballots and tabulate the results accurately, securely, and in a very transparent way. This entire system is what is submitted to federal accredited test labs, where they are reviewed for every aspect of the system, including a line-by-line source code review. In terms of the actual physical custody, once they are delivered, in the case of Georgia, they would have been delivered in 2019, the physical custody transfers to the election officials, the local election officials, not Dominion. So it's the local election officials that have physical custody of the machines. It is them that run the process. They control the machines. There is public testing of these machines before and after each election to ensure that there's no manipulation or tamper with the system. And in the case of Georgia, they have specifically conducted post-election audits of these machines that verify both the security of the machines and the accuracy of the counts.
Emma, how much more complicated have these runoff races become for election workers?
Oh, I mean, so much more complicated and stressful. I mean, what Mr. Poulos was talking about with his employees is also happening to election workers. You know, we've had election workers had to go into hiding here because they've been targeted by misinformation. And it's just really, I mean, they're the recipients of almost the worst of all of this, because they're doing their job in a nonpartisan way, serving their fellow citizens. And it's all of this adds on all of the misinformation and the questioning and the fraud allegations is on top of just a really busy year for election officials in Georgia, period. I mean, just baseline, it's really difficult to go from a presidential election to a almost presidential election level turnout runoff, you know, a couple of weeks later. So this is just a lot.
And do you think there's a lot of concern among voters about the integrity of the elections framework, including the machines?
There is among Republican voters in particular. There are questions. There are people saying to me, "Oh, well, I'm going to vote, but I don't know if it's going to count. But I guess I'm going to vote because what else can I do?" And there are people saying secondhand stories of, "Well, someone I know isn't going to vote because they don't believe their vote's going to count anymore." And that's kind of my question to Mr. Poulos is, with all of this being said, even as you try to refute misinformation, there are voters who still truly believe that the system was rigged against Republicans and that they don't, and that their vote won't count going forward. Have you all thought internally at all about how you can approach things differently? I don't know. Does this change your job description at all going forward?
I take that as a question for me. We are constantly asking ourselves the same question and working with various election officials that we serve on what, if anything, we can be doing differently. At the end of the day, it does come back to one thing, which is voters head to the voting location and they create a paper ballot that has clearly marked their candidates that they wish to vote for. And the custody of those physical paper ballots reside with the bipartisan election officials in their counties.
We're talking to John Poulos. He's the CEO of Dominion Voting Systems, Inc. Also with us, Emma Hurt. She's a politics reporter with WABE in Atlanta. John, longer term, though, this will be on the other side of this election at some point. How do you reinstill confidence in your voting systems, considering that these unfounded allegations are coming from the president of the United States?
Well, in the short to medium term, what we would aim to do with a lawsuit is to move the claims from a social media form where there are no rules on evidence-based process into a form where there are, specifically into a court of law. And having those claims heard in court with an appropriate discovery process from each of the parties involved, going to a final verdict is, in our opinion, just the first thing that needs to happen. Beyond the obvious litigation avenue, we are looking at continued path of testing through federal and state authorities and being very transparent in demonstrating to voters how our machines work, how they rely on fundamental paper ballots, and how the tabulation of those ballots is 100% transparent and can be audited by any party easily and effectively at their choosing.
You said you are working on a lawsuit against Trump attorney Sidney Powell. After President Trump is out of office, he will still have access to social media. If he continues to beat this drum, will you consider legal action against him?
Well, we have a very robust legal team looking at all the parties that have not only sourced falsities about Dominion, our customers, and the process that we were involved in, but also the media companies that have amplified and provided an unfettered platform for the repetition of these falsities.
Are there specific media companies you're looking at right now?
Pardon me?
Are there specific media companies you're looking at right now?
The team is looking at all the media companies without exception. And ultimately, it's the legal team that's going to advise us as to the next steps and to who and when we will be filing, make additional filings against.
Emma, prior to the November election, we warned people that we would not have election results right away. It would be days, perhaps even weeks, before we knew who won. How long will it take for us to know for sure who actually won the Georgia runoffs?
The question of the week. I do think it's safe to say nobody really knows the answer to that, but we do know it's going to be election week. Excuse me. And I'll just add, you know, unlike November, when election lawyers were spread all around the country watching things on both sides of the aisle, right now, everybody's focused on Georgia. And so will that generate more litigation, more issues, more questions that might slow things down? And also, there's a lot more poll watchers and observers who have been deployed by both sides this time around, particularly the Republican side. And so what effects will that have on the process? But, you know, in November, it was about Friday morning when the absentee ballot tallies flipped to Joe Biden. I don't know. That's about all we've got as a timeline to look towards.
So what will you be watching out for tomorrow and throughout the rest of this week, Emma?
Tomorrow, we're watching turnout and where these voters will be voting tomorrow. We're going to be looking to see if Republicans can make up the gains that Democrats have made in early vote turnout. That's the big question here.
That's Emma Hurt. She's a politics reporter at WABE in Atlanta. Also with us, John Poulos. He's the CEO of Dominion Voting Systems Incorporated. Thanks to you both. Remember to subscribe to the 1A podcast. It's where you'll find our best guests and stories every day. And you can listen whenever you'd like. Get it wherever you find your podcasts. Today's producer was Paige Osborne. This program comes to you from WAMU, part of American University in Washington, distributed by NPR. I'm Jen White. Thanks for listening, and let's talk more soon. This is 1A.